I want to talk to you about a topic which Philippe studied over about 20 years, and which is relatively not well known in this community because the ideas are mainly of an algorithmic nature. So these algorithms are data streaming algorithms. The paradigm is that we have this very large sequence S over an equally large domain V. And the elements come one after the other. We can consider the sequence as a multi-set, and in this case, we are interested in the following quantitative statistics. The first one is length, which is a relatively easy problem because you just increment every time you see a new element. The second one is cardinality, and this one is a little bit trickier because you have the main problem of avoiding repetitions and a generalization of both statistics is the frequency moments, which I'm not quite sure I know what they're used for, but they're an interesting statistic. And in this talk, I will focus on cardinality and the various way Philippe's initial algorithm in 1985 evolved throughout the years. So the constraints are we want our algorithms to use very little processing memory. So typically this is either logarithmic, polylogarithmic, or constant. We have to process the data on the fly, which means it's a single pass, and the instructions that are used for each element have to be very reduced. We can't make any statistical hypothesis. For instance, for the cardinality, if we make the statistical hypothesis that all the elements only appear at most once, the problem is usually simplified. And we wish to be as accurate as possible, contingent on the storage that is used. I think it's very interesting to place Philippe's first paper on this topic back in the historical context. So, in the 1970s, as we all know, there was a drive to start studying the average case analysis of algorithms. And this basically consisted in taking deterministic algorithms and feeding them random input and seeing how they behave on the whole instead of just focusing on the worst case. Between 1966 76 and 78, the first randomized algorithms appeared. And it seemed to be a pretty potent method to reach better complexity for certain problems. And the main algorithms that emerged at that time were primality testing, matrix multiplication, verification, finding the nearest neighbors in the plane. And in 1979, Munro and Patterson gave an algorithm that could find the median in one pass with only random storage. And that's almost the first streaming algorithm, but not quite, because as you can see, the storage size is not logarithmic. And so in 1983, probabilistic counting by Flechaud and Martin is more or less the first streaming algorithm that has appeared, and it's a pretty potent field since then because we all know that data is increasingly large and we need to process it increasingly fast. Probabilistic counting is, and this is something that is not well known, and according to Google Scholar, it's the most cited paper of Philippe's if you don't count the book. It's interesting to see where the problem comes from. In many talks on probabilistic counting algorithms, you usually cite databases as one of the applications, but you usually leave it at that. In fact, databases is where this technique was born. In the 70s, IBM researches relational database, because up until then, databases were just big chunks of data, and you had to manually access the data and figure out what was the most efficient way to get certain queries. IBM was working, so first in the UK with the purely relational transport vehicle, and then in the US and California with System R, was looking to find a way to write databases that could be accessed with a high-level query language. And the main problem was to be able to compile these queries into something that was as efficient as something that a human programmer would write. And so query optimization was a big thing back then. And it soon emerged that cardinality plays an important role in optimizing these queries. So the standard example for this is the join query, which is basically the intersection of two sets, but that's a little bit complicated to explain. So I'll limit myself to a simple, almost trivial example, but it sort of shows the nature. So we have a table that contains the list of all the participants from this conference, and we want to select the name of all the men who are French. The question is, if you want to minimize the number of comparisons, even while still remaining linear, because you have to see all the entries, do you first compare the sex to check if an entry is a male, or do you first compare the nationality? Well, if you know the cardinality of both attributes, that means if you know how many sexes there are in the participants, and how many nationalities, the selectivity of comparing on each is the inverse of that. So for instance, you can assume reasonably that there are only two sexes. So if you compare on the sex, you're gonna select about half of the participants, and you're still going to have to weed out through that log. If you select on nationality, we heard the other day there were about 21 nationalities represented here, so you're going to only keep 1/21 of the participants, and you're going to be able to speed through them much quicker. So the person who basically came up with the first version of probabilistic counting was this guy here, Jean, Nigel, and Martin, who was working on the PRTV database in the UK, and once that project was terminated, went to the States for a short visit in San Jose to sort of share what he had done and this algorithm that he worked in. And coincidentally, in 1981, Philippe goes to IBM San Jose, and his supervisor there, or the person he works for, Hugh Young Wong. I'll read what she wrote, Nigel, it's better so. As I said over the phone, I started working on your algorithm when Hugh Young Wong considered implementing it and wanted explanations and estimations. I find it simple, elegant, and amazingly powerful. So Philippe writes to Martin in 81 with already the full notes of the analysis of the algorithm, and says, let's write this paper together. The main element of this algorithm is hashing. So it's a bit important to see what was the mindset of hashing at that time. Hashing appeared in the 50s as a part of hash tables, and it's only until around 1969 that Bloom filters to answer the set membership problem appeared that the hash functions were first seen in an approximation context. And in 1977, Carter and Vegman published a very important paper called Universal Hashing. And in Universal Hashing, what they did is they considered the hash functions as probabilistic objects, and they proved under some very complicated, very hard conditions to satisfy in practice, but they showed that it's possible to have hash functions, construct hash functions that are actually uniform. And so seeing that and couching that in these terms inspired people to look at hash functions as a way to transform any sort of data into random variables, or if you look at it from a discrete point of view, into sequences of random bits. So hash functions takes elements from the domain we're interested about and maps them to infinite strings of zeros and ones, such that each bit has the same probability to be zero and the same probability to be one. And so here I have plotted all the words of the dictionary according to the first two letters, so A, A, B, B. So you can see, for instance, that there are very few words that begin with Y and Z in the English language. And I applied a hash function and then sorted them numerically. And you can see that the hash function really does a good job at making the data uniform. So, of course, there will always be people that say, well, you know what, I don't really believe that hash functions work if you advertise them, or the theoretical probabilities that you set on them are not very realistic. And Philippe's approach was, of course, very pragmatic. He said, well, it works, let's leave it at that. And recently, actually, in 2010, so much later, two researchers, Mittenmacher and Verdun, proved that the reason why simple hash functions work is that they exploit the entropy that's in the data that you hash. Okay, so that's out of the way. From now on, you can consider that once something is hashed, it's a random variable that has the probability aspect of it. So, probabilistic counting, here we go. We have our sequence. We look at each element and we hash it. So HV, as we just said, transforms the elements into a string of random bits. And so we expect that we will see the sequence of bits 0 and then something half of the time. We expect that we will see strings that begin by 1 and 0 1/4 of the time. We expect to see strings that begin by 1, 1, 0, 1, 8 of the time. So that's just a simple intersection of probabilities. Probably that the first byte is 1, the second byte is 1, and the third byte is 0. And so we can generalize this and say, well, because the strings are uniform, the prefix pattern 1 to the k followed by 0 appears with probability 1 divided by 2 to the k plus 1. So you can infer that seeing prefix 1k 0 means it's likely that there is over 2 to the k plus 1 different string. And so the idea is to keep track, I'm sorry, I'm moving my mic a little bit. And the idea is to keep track of prefixes of 1k zeros that have appeared, and from them to estimate the cardinality 2p, where p is the size of the largest prefix that we've seen. So this idea works, but unfortunately, there's a small bias. So the values that you get aren't really n, but they're slightly off. And so there are two ways of fixing this problem. In the original algorithm, Martin decided that he would look at the three bits that followed the first zero, and he would try to figure out if they were a 0, 0, 0, then you subtract 1 to the rank that you found. If they're 1, 1, 1, you add 1, and so he would try to make corrections to fix the problem. Then Philippe comes along, and his approach is that with a mathematical analysis, you can find the exact bias of this estimator, and so this is the constant, which actually Philippe was very fascinated about because he always referred to it as the magic constant. And you could invert it very simply to have an estimator that is unbiased. And so this is also why Philippe was very fond of saying that with these algorithms, no analysis implies no algorithms, because the analysis, finding these constants, are key to making an algorithm that actually works. So, once we've put all this together, this is what the algorithm looks like. We have our hash function, we have function rho, which is the position of the first bit equal to 0, and we initialize a bitmap with all entries equal to 0, and for each element, we hash it, we find the rank of the first 0, And this gives us a position in the bitmap, which we set to 1. Once we're done with all the elements, we look at the rank of the first zero, and we return q to the p, which is normalized by the constant. So for instance, if at the end of this process, our bitmap looks like this, then p is 5, because 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and we return this. So, as you can see, it's probable that the 1 is going to be, there's going to be sort of a shift in the 1. It might be a bit 1 bit too high or 1 bit too low, and so typically estimates are 1 binary order of magnitude and all the exact results. So for instance, if you're estimating 10,000, you're as likely to get 5,000 as you are to get 20,000. So of course that's not very satisfying. It's too inaccurate for practical applications. So a fairly natural idea is to take m hash functions, to hash each element n times, and to do this bit setting on m parallel bitmaps. And so with this, you expect it to increase the accuracy by 1 over square root of m. But unfortunately, calculating m hash values is very, very costly. So, of course, the trick that that they found is to use a technique that they call stochastic averaging. And so Philippe liked to explain it this way. You have a train yard, and you have trains, incoming trains, that come and that are switched randomly to a different track. So you split the elements in x substring randomly using the first few bits of the hash function. That guarantees that you always send an element in the same substring. You don't send it once in one substring and another, which would of course count it twice and not be what you want. And so after you use these first few bits to choose a substring, you discard them. So for instance, if n equals 4, you sample the first two bits, and if it's 0, 0, then you put b3, b4, etc., and then have 0, 0, and etc., etc. This works very nicely, and so we have the following results. As we've seen, the estimator is unbiased, and its accuracy using m bitmaps, which is approximately 32 bits each, is 0.78 over square root of m. So concretely, we need m log n memory instead of on for exact. And as an example, you can count cardinality up to 1 billion with error 6% using only 4 kilobytes. So that was a good algorithm, and it was very widely used as a citation count assess. But around 2002, Philippe decided to mix things up a little. And so with a PhD student, Marianne Durand, which is here on her wedding day, they figured that p, probabilistic counting, each bitmap requires k bits to count to cardinalities up to 2 to the k. But reasoning backwards from observation, it's reasonable that when estimating a cardinality, for instance, 2 to the 3, you observe the bitmap that has 3 ones and then zeros. Because remember, seeing the first bit set to 1 means that n is larger than 2. Seeing b1 and b2 means that n is larger than 4. And seeing the 3 means that n is larger than 8. So what if, instead of keeping the whole bitmap, you only kept track of the position of the largest rank that you found through the hashing? And that only, I'm sorry for the mistake, that only requires log log n bits instead of log n. So in the algorithm, everywhere you have bitmap of I, which is, remember, the stochastic averaging of rho of hx set to 1, you're going to replace it by bitmap I, maximum of what's already in the bitmap, and the rank. So for example, if we compare the evolution of the bitmap with probabilistic counting in log log, first we have only zeros and the counter is set to 1, then here we set it to 4. Why do we set it? Oh yeah, the 0. No, yeah, the 0 here. Here we don't change it, Now we do here, and here this zero is in position 5, so we put 5 in Fermi. So this works wonderfully, except, of course, when it doesn't. Because it often turns out to give the same estimate, but sometimes it differs. And when does it differ? It's when in the bitmap there's like a fluke that happens, and one of the high order bits is set to 1. So in probabilistic counting, that didn't matter, because what you were basically interested in is the size of the run of 1s. But in log-log, since you take the max, having this high bit sets it to 8, and that's a huge discrepancy. To see it another way, basically the registers of log-log is the maximum of n geometric variables with parameter 1/2. And this distribution has long tails, because as you can see, though the values are mainly concentrated here, you have a few, just a few, but that are very far away. So, when you look at this, what's your idea to sort of improve this? You say that the loss, this is why we lost some accuracy, and to solve this problem, the intuition is to just simply remove the highest value. So, the idea is, you're going to look at your registers when you're done, and the 30% that are the highest, you're going to discard them. And using this yields a two-time estimation. I'm not going to enter into details. The analysis is much more complicated, to the effect that I didn't publish it. But the accuracy is much better. So for all intents and purposes, this is the algorithm that they, for instance, gave this guy from British Telecom when he needed an estimator. And it worked very well. And I think Philippe thought that that was sort of the end of the question for a moment. But it wasn't. In 2005, with a PhD student, Frédéric Giroir, he studied another class of cardinality algorithms based on the minimum. And that was because there was a 2002 article by Bar Yosef that looked at these algorithms. And this, the Giroir's thesis inspired Chassin and Gérin to try to figure out, using statistical tools, what the best estimator is from an information theoretic sense. And they figured out that the best estimator is based on an harmonic mean. And so Frédéric Meunier was sort of very interested by this result, and so he came when he was at INRIA for a year. He went and saw Philippe, and he said, well, you know, Philippe, there's these two guys that say that the harmonic mean might be better than what you have. And Philippe was sort of like, because he thought it might be just a sort of little extension that wasn't very fundamental. But, of course, as Philippe is always curious, he took his laptop in Maple, and he plotted out a few simulations, and as you have it, it turns out that the estimations were really much better. But why? The explanation, which he figured out eventually, was actually very beautiful. It's simply that the arithmetic mean, which they had been using up until then, tends to get distorted by large values, whereas the harmonic mean is not perturbed at all. So as you can see here, if you take 32 different values and you have one that varies, the harmonic mean will stay pretty close to the value, the initial value, which is 20,000, whereas the arithmetic mean will tend to infinity. And so basically, using a harmonic mean does what they did when they were eliminating the 30% that were too high in a much more elegant and much more aesthetic way. Not to mention it was easier to analyze. And so that gave hyperloglog, which has the wonderful accuracy of 1.03 on square root of m. And of course, the sort of the mascot of these algorithms was Shakespeare, ever since Marianne Durand figured out that these were the texts that were the easiest to process because they were available on the net. And so Philippe liked to show that the whole Shakespeare is summarized in this little square thing. And with this, you can get the estimate that, and a very good estimate, using only 128 bytes. Well, something I didn't mention is that the algorithms have very, very nice property. In particular, they can be distributed, and so you can calculate. They can be distributed, and they can be combined in such a way that calculating the union of two strings, given the sketches, the registers of the different strings, is just as simple of taking the mass of each register. And so this allows us to use hyperlog-log to do what we call a data classification with a similarity index. And so I'm not going to enter the details, but an Indian student that came to do an internship in India did some very beautiful experiments where, for instance, here, Philippe gave him lots of texts that were encrypted at a word level, and he wanted him to use similarity to sort of group them into groups of the same languages. And using hyperlog-log and the similarity index, he was able to basically do it. Okay. So, for purposes of clarity and also for purposes of time, I have left out of the discussion Philippe's discovery of proximate counting, which came after probabilistic counting, actually. And especially, I left out another algorithm called adaptive sampling, which is beautiful and which was ahead of its time, which has a very, very simple explanation using tries, and which was grossly underappreciated because I think only Philippe cites it. And that's very unfortunate because it was rediscovered in 2000 independently by someone else, and at that point it had a different name, the scheme sampling, and it worked like fire because it got like something like 300 citations. One of the things I think that comes out of all this is that one of the things I'd like to point out is that I love the creativity of Philippe, who was very, very fond of naming the things that he discovered. And so approximate counting, adaptive sampling, log-log, the very evocative name of log-log, and hyper-log-log that are very memorable. Those are all things that names that Philippe came up with, and which make it fairly easier to reference an algorithm than algorithm one from paper. Another thing I'd like to highlight is that Philippe consistently gave expressed his algorithms in terms of the storage that is used, whereas most of theoretical work that have been done since then focus on epsilon and how you pick epsilon and what's the complexity. And I'm not sure that's the approach that is typical for if you are talking to practitioners, because they want to know how much storage you're going to use, not how precise the precision is a side effect. And speaking of which, so he wrote for people who were going to use these algorithms instead of just doing theoretical work. And on that note, I also it reminds me of something that he was very, very, sad, regretful of having called the paper hyperlog-log the analysis of the near-optimal cardinality estimation algorithm, because he thought, and perhaps rightly so, that putting analysis in the title sort of was a big turn-off for engineers who he was targeting. Okay, and so if you want this PDF and also all of these previously mentioned algorithms implemented in Mathematica, plus a video of Philippe talking about these algorithms, you can go to my website. And yes, and I would just like to finish by saying that I'm incredibly grateful to be here, and especially to have all of you here, because, it's just great. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your talk. Are there some questions?